What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. If you are a previous listener, then welcome back as always. And if you are new, then here's a little bit of information about myself and us. If you are sick of dodgy influencers or people with amazing genetics giving you health and fitness advice online, you're in the right place, because every week I help you cut through the confusion of the internet. We discuss relevant topics and we help bring clarity and evidence to these subjects. I'm an online health and fitness expert and I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation. I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football, and I've been a health and fitness expert for over a decade, and I've been helping real people feel better, move smarter, and get amazing results. Each week, I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and bust myths. This week, I'll be joined by Daisy Robbins, who is a yoga instructor and founder of Reset Wellness. However, first of all, I'll be joined by Elle Mace, who is a therapist, coach, and speaker, who specializes in body image, self-worth, and disordered eating, using both her professional expertise and professional experience to support others on their healing journey. Elle Mace, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. It's much appreciated. How's the journey in?
Yeah, well, I was here last night, so I came up from Devon yesterday morning, and I did a talk with Seed Talks last night, stayed over. Here now, and then back home to Devon.
Great, amazing stuff. Well, thank you again for joining us. So let's dive straight into it, okay?
Yeah.
So in your own words, what is a body dysmorphic disorder, which is BDD, correct?
Yes.
And how does it differ from general body I'll let you take it from there.
Dissatisfaction.
There you go.
Yeah, so body dissatisfaction is where it's like affects 60% of UK adults. And it is where, you know, you don't like your body or you feel uncomfortable in your body, but it doesn't affect your day-to-day life so much. You know, it's not a constant battle. And it might ebb and flow with like hormones or stress levels or just general experiences in life. Whereas BDD is more of a permanent state. Okay. And it is really, you know, all consuming. It will get in the way of you doing your, living your daily life, maybe socializing. You might have to like withdraw. You have like lots of obsessive behaviors. And one in 50 adults in the UK are diagnosed with BDD.
Okay. And are there many tests that are done for this? Is it something you can go to the GP for, or is it just kind of, you can go online, you can kind of Google your symptoms, or you can kind of, you know, we all go, well, I mean, we don't all, but lots of people do Google their symptoms. Is that potentially something that, you know, is done?
Yeah, I think like the word body dysmorphia is thrown around a lot, especially online. And, you know, I'm seeing lots of influencers kind of like, you know, saying I've got body dysmorphia, but maybe that is more kind of body dissatisfaction. Mm. Body dysmorphia, there is a diagnosis and there it follows with the DSM-5 regulations. And so the best thing to do if you think you have body dysmorphia is to go to the doctors, and then they will be able to do an analysis on you and be able to support you if you do have BDD.
Okay. And are there kind of lesser known ways body dysmorphia can show up in everyday life? Is it less, or is it more, you know, obviously we look at ourselves and we go, oh, you know, I don't like the way I look or the way I feel, you know, what other ways can it show up in everyday life?
Yeah, well, it can be all consuming. And so it can show up in many different ways. You'll have some people that may do a lot of like mirror checking. They're checking themselves all the time. You might have the opposite where people avoid mirrors. For me, I had body dysmorphia, but I kind of had like the compensation side. So I almost became like overly confident, masking it all. Whereas other people will then really withdraw. It's like attached behaviors would be like people pleasing, high comparison levels, a lack of emotional regulation. And on average, someone with BDD can be like thinking about their perceived flaws for anywhere between like 3 and 8 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
It's a long time.
But mentally fatiguing as well, or not?
Absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, I'd struggle. Yeah, I'd feel pretty tired if I looked at myself. 3 to 8 hours in the mirror. To be fair, once upon a time, when I was super, super lean, I probably had body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
I literally don't think I could walk past a clean car a window or a reflection of myself without going, "Oh, I look good."
Yeah.
Literally, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my mum one day, being like, "I don't think I'm okay.
Yeah.
I can't stop looking at myself when I walk past any sort of reflection."
Yeah.
It was almost like, yeah, it was pretty, pretty heavy.
Yeah. And then what you've got with that is you're not just doing that like physical behavior of looking in the car reflection, but it's the voice in the head. That constant voice that's telling you, like, there's something wrong with this part of your body.
Yeah.
No matter how many people say to you, "No, your nose is absolutely fine," or "You're beautiful." Like, if, you know, it's like, it's not a choice to have it. It's like, I think some people think it might be vain
or like narcissistic or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, but another catchphrase.
It's a mental health condition. It's like, people do not choose to have it.
Okay. Now, fitness and health professionals, do you think a lot of people have body dysmorphia in the health and fitness industry? Or do you think, because I say this quite a lot on the show, comparison is the thief of all joy.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is absolute dross and potty because we all go online. We go, "Oh, I love what she's wearing. Oh, she looks great." Or, "Oh, you know, look how big his biceps are. Look how strong he is," or whatever. And we're comparing ourselves to others. I say this to my clients all the time. If you buy a program off me to look like me, I'm going to refund you. Because you will never look like me. You are not me.
Yeah.
You do not have the same genetics.
Yeah.
Stop buying off influencers because you want to look like them.
Yeah.
You have wider hips. You have a wider torso. You have a smaller bust. You have a bigger bust. Whatever it is, you cannot look like someone else unless it's your twin or maybe someone in your bloodline.
Yeah. And even then, still all different.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's although, of course, everyone's doing that. Everyone's so, well, not everyone, but majority of people are so vulnerable and they really are striving for this look of perfection. And they will, what their perception of perfection is maybe somebody who, you know, is a fitness influencer. But you really don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. Like, how does that person maintain that body? Like, as someone that looks at everything through a disordered eating, like, window always... Yeah. There will be some people who are genetically like that and some people that maybe have got there without having to work too hard. That is going to be a minimum amount of people. Most people will be cutting out food groups. They will be so controlled, restricted. Yeah. When you look at people, you've got to think, I don't know what's behind the scenes here.
Well, we look at, obviously, I will talk about anabolics and I'll talk about weight loss injections for men and women, both of them. When do you ever get someone who looks amazing? Right, you've hit the nail on the head. Such a small percentage of people have phenomenal genetics.
Yeah.
And there is, I think there's a guy called Matt Does Fitness. He's a gladiator. He's got this incredible physique. He regularly does blood tests to prove that he has not taken anabolic steroids because he looks amazing. He's a genetic freak of nature. Very, very blessed.
Yeah.
Okay? But you don't see the others doing it.
No.
Why not? Because they have taken something, but they want to pretend that they've genetically got this amazing physique.
Yeah.
It's okay. Just own it. Be an adult.
Yeah.
Just be an adult.
Own it. And the amount of people that contact me who have come off the back of a competition, bodybuilders.
Oh, I bet.
And they're like, "Oh my gosh, help me. I am binging. Like, it's just wild. I'm completely out of control. My self-worth." They just go into this like depression.
Binge eating disorder, right? That's what it can become.
Yeah, it can become that. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you've had been that in that heavy restriction, like there is an end date to that. And like I had this and I was a heavy restrictor for years. And then one day I just woke up with this aggressive binge eating.
Yeah.
And like that's what happens to these bodybuilders. And, you know, even you would have seen the photo shoots that the PTs are all doing now. I have people that say to me, "I'm in this PT group. We've got this photo shoot and it's actually now creating the disordered eating." But the whole photo shoot is about the empowerment and it's just so wrong.
It's actually a marketing tool to get clients through the door. I've worked with a mentor who was like, "You should do this." And I was like, "No, it's not me. I want to help everyday people feel better, be healthier. I'm not trying to get people ready for a bloody photo shoot that's going to give them disorders. I'm trying to bring them back from the depths of despair where they've overeaten or this, that and the other."
Yeah.
I mean, again, not to bring this back to me, but I was like yourself. I had an overeating disorder issue. I think I did 14 takeaways in 7 days. after being super restricted.
Yeah.
I remember. It was expensive because I'm a big eater as well.
Yeah, but, yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's... So how can body dysmorphia or body image, or poor body image, sorry, impact someone's mental health, relationships, or day-to-day functioning?
Oh, yeah. And all of that. You know, some people with body dysmorphia, they may have an imbalance of serotonin. So those like happy hormones, there might be a deficiency there. So actually, often you can just, you can struggle with your mood and anxiety and depression. But it affects every part. You're often living like a bit of a secret life. Like, I don't really know anyone who goes out there and tells people about their body dysmorphia. If they're recovered, they might. But if they're in it, so therefore, people don't know what's going on for you. So it's hard to be authentic. It's hard to open up.
Yeah.
A part with body dysmorphia and, poor body image is you feel like a bit of a fraud. Like, I always remember thinking, when I get into a relationship, what if they see me with my makeup off? Or like, they're going to realize I'm not who they think I am. Like, there's this imposter syndrome coming up. So it's hard to just build those connections. And when what I look for when someone's trying to, recover from body dysmorphia is actually how their relationships are improving. It's a really key sign to whether they're making progress.
Okay. I didn't realize that would be a metric to measure it. But I guess because it's being around someone else and kind of being comfortable, right?
And being able to socialize and be heard and listen and engage and have the headspace to be present and enjoy moments. I mean, how many people with body dysmorphia are at an event or at dinner and they're mentally just not there?
Well, yeah, I mean, probably most. Mm. Yeah, most. I mean, I know we've touched upon it as well, but with obviously social media, do you think that is giving a large increase in body dysmorphia and eating disorders?
Yeah.
You know, Instagram, TikTok, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and it absolutely will be because 91% of social media is edited. It's, you've got all the, filters and everything. So everything's fake. But also, it will be contributing, but we also have to remember that disordered eating and body dysmorphia is deeper rooted. So it's the trauma, the environmental situations, the hormones, all of this. So that, it's not just the social, it's also all of that.
That kind of brings it to the forefront because it's there and it kind of makes you think about yourself in a negative way.
Yeah.
But obviously it's deep rooted, like you said.
You can suppress the trauma and you can suppress emotions you don't want to feel. But with like Instagram, it's like torture. You'll just put yourself through it. You can sit there and just scroll and scroll and scroll. And, it's like been proven that we kind of do it on purpose to torment ourselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I was reading this study where it's like, why do we do it? We know it's not good for us, but we literally just can't stop. And
what was it? We had a lady come in before. It's like TikTok brain, isn't it? Where we have a short attention span. We need to keep scrolling for that quick dopamine hit. And obviously there's so much stuff on at the moment. It's like, having a powerful hook will keep your viewers engaged and all this stuff. So hooks are getting better. They're visual, they're verbal. And there's all these things that's drawing you in more and more and more.
Yeah, it's all very aesthetically pleasing, isn't it?
It is. And like you said, it's very fake. I actually said something about that yesterday. I just hate how fake the world is becoming.
Yeah.
No one's authentic anymore. No one's genuine. Someone always wants something from you.
Mm.
What are some of the early signs that someone might be developing an eating disorder or, an unhealthy relationship with food?
Yeah, so early signs can look like the actual physical part of the food. So, starting to change the way they're eating, maybe starting to restrict their intake or having these kind of more like impulsive eating sessions. But then mentally, like having a bit of a preoccupation with the food, also with their body, withdrawing from... withdrawing from their social circles, or again back to the other one, maybe like compensating more. There are lots and lots of hidden signs that doesn't just play out in the body weight, and it doesn't just play out in the way somebody's eating.
Yeah, it's not just
We think I hear all the time, she doesn't look like she's got an eating disorder. And I'm like,
it's like with the whole disability thing. Oh, it doesn't look like they've got a disability. Well, not everything's visible. Like, we have eyes, great.
Yeah.
Most people have very good vision. And then we all judge when we shouldn't. And we all look and we make our own perception of someone. You might look at someone and go, oh, I wonder what they do. And you make something up in your head.
Yeah.
That's the problem you've got.
Yeah, definitely. And you just don't know what's going on for anyone. And I think if you do think something might be happening for somebody, you've always got to ask, like, what else is going on here? Like, what... you know, yes, there's an element of food, but there also massively isn't. So what is going on for this person? Are they going for a breakup? Are they just have this high stress levels? Are they burn out? Are they, you know, getting some, the closets are opening from like, you know, yes. 10 years ago.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is happening for this person?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right, aren't you? It's so many questions to be asked, really. Are there any myths people often have about eating disorders or how they affect them?
Yes, I think eating disorders... Well, one myth is that like you only have an eating disorder if you're anorexic. So if you're clearly very underweight, which isn't true. You can have people in much larger bodies who also have a form of anorexia.
Yeah.
They can be severely under eating, but not necessarily the body showing it. So there's definitely a misconception there. I think as well, people think it's like, I've heard people say, oh God, it makes you crazy and things like that. Like, I think people associate it with being quite kind of psychotic because the press has just shown previously, like, the sort of worst case scenarios. Where sadly, you know, it does result in people losing their lives.
Yeah.
But eating disorders comes on such a huge spectrum. You know, you've got bulimia, which you have that sort of urge to get rid of the food, whether that's over exercising.
Yeah, yeah.
So people might not associate that with an eating disorder because there's not food included in it.
Yeah.
Like absolutely anyone, it doesn't discriminate as well. No matter who you are, what gender, where you are from in the world. Mm-hmm. You could have an eating disorder.
Yeah, you can. I mean, for me, I always thought bulimia was obviously trying to, like you said, get rid of food from your body. But you've also just said that it's also through forms of exercise.
Mm.
Which I never actually knew that.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating.
And laxatives.
Yeah. Wow, that's really fascinating. I always thought it was from the upper end, but
yeah.
There are multiple ways, I guess.
So high prevalence in sports and athletes, especially athletes that have, high stress, a lot of, they need to perform on a regular basis.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it is a really interesting topic, and I'm sure it's, like you said, I'd be super intrigued. You said it was 1 in 50.
1 in 50 have a BDD in the UK.
Okay.
And, and 66% of under 18s are very dissatisfied with their body.
That must be so much higher than it used to be 20 years ago. Because, like, 20 years ago... You know, I'd have been a young nipper. I don't think I ever looked at myself and went, oh, I don't like the way I look.
Yeah, see, I was the opposite.
Really? I think maybe it's probably higher in young girls.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I think everything's...
It's probably balanced out.
Yeah, it's balancing out. But yeah, I think, it's... I mean, those stats have definitely increased with the under-18s, but... Look at the, I mean, that is probably a lot to play with social media because these teens are on social media.
I think there should be a cap.
I think there should.
I actually had an idea for Instagram, which obviously would never have got anywhere.
No.
You know, we like to dream, right? I actually would have loved if they'd made it so that you had to be 16 and above.
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally 16 and above. Or it's a parent like shared account.
Yeah.
So it would be shared with your parent. So your parent would have to link their Instagram with yours.
Yeah.
And you could only see what you're allowed to see, like parental guided, basically. But anyone listening, do not steal my idea. What steps should someone take if they suspect that they might have an eating disorder or body image issues?
Yeah, like the most accessible way to relieve some of it is to reach out to somebody that you trust and a safe person. And for some people, that actually might just feel impossible. That might feel like there is nobody that they can reach out to because it can feel so heavy. But make that call to the doctors. Just go and see them. There's a lot more awareness about eating disorders. You know, when I had an eating disorder when I was younger, I went to the doctors and she just said I was depressed and that I wasn't sick enough, which is still...
Wasn't sick enough.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Yeah, my weight wasn't low enough. My binge eating wasn't the right amount to hit the criteria. But you know, there's better awareness about it now. It's still not great, but get to the doctors, reach out to a friend, reach out to me, reach out to people that are trusted online that that can offer support. And there's also some great websites. Beat website's brilliant.
Beat.
BEAT.
Okay,
that's a fantastic eating disorder website.
Right, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This has been great. It's been a very insightful conversation. Where can everyone find you online? You've got Instagram, socials. Have you got, after we've spoken heavily about them, website?
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah, so I am on Instagram and TikTok. It's at I am L Mace, ELLEMACE. My website is www.elmace.com. So yeah, come over, give us a follow.
Amazing. Thank you, El. Thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very
much.
I'll
speak to you soon. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be joined by Daisy Robbins, yoga instructor and founder of Reset Wellness. I'm going to be joined by Daisy Robbins, yoga instructor and founder of Reset Wellness.
FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Joining me now is Daisy Robbins, who is a certified 500-hour RYT yoga instructor, a Reiki practitioner, a wellness coach, and reformer Pilates teacher who has founded the Reset Wellness platform and tailors playfulness, inclusive and strength-focused practices to support physical and mental well-being. Daisy, hello, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. Someone of your, you know, your pedigree and the hours that you've put into your profession, so it's great. Let's dive straight into the questions, okay?
Yeah.
So, what first drew you to yoga, and how has your relationship with the practice evolved over time?
It was actually, it's quite a good but long story, I suppose. But noticed I was quite a party girl, I suppose, which doesn't mean that you can't still be and still teach and practice yoga, Pilates, because that's also very misconstrued. I think you can still go out and have a great time. But I saw a photo of myself in like a nightclub, and I was like this, really hunched. And and I thought, geez, my posture is so bad, to the point I'd actually, my mum, people started saying it. So I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, well, you know, you've got scoliosis, which means your spine's slightly curved. Mm-hmm. Luckily, mine is not that bad, but there are, I see a lot of people day to day with, you know, scoliosis, and actually the blend of yoga, Pilates and stuff helps so much. And that originally was what my doctor said, was go and do a yoga class. And in my head I thought, which I think a lot of people do as well, was, oh my god, if I'm going to go and exercise, I'm not going to go to a yoga class. Like, why would I waste my time doing that when I can get better results from going for a run or lifting weights or whatever, going to the gym?
Yeah.
So the attitude was very much functional fitness as opposed to really working on how your posture and your body and everything align.
Yeah.
So I ended up not doing much, and then in lockdown I thought, hang on, I'm gonna try a yoga class, this actually looks like you know I've got nothing else to do. And I got completely hooked on it, and that is essentially how it evolved. And then I took time to go and see or research different yoga trainings, and I think fortunately I found the best one in the world. So
amazing. That's a really nice story, and I like how it's kind of like you said, you proper, you thought about it and you went, nah, I'm not going to. And then you kind of was like, actually, go on, let's give it a go. And, you know, that's literally what I say to people all the time. Just try it. I always try everything twice. You know, some people try it once, but try everything twice, because first time you either get a high or a low or a bad experience or a great experience. But the second time you get a better experience, because it's like, it's not new, but it's like, it's still kind of new. So you get the enjoyment of learning as well.
Yeah.
And falling and doing whatever that, you know, you might not do very well.
Of course, I think everything becomes more familiar and more comfortable. And I do think in the yoga world and Pilates as well, I'm more new to the reformer Pilates than I am with yoga. And I think there it's very different. They're totally different. They're two completely different things.
Yeah.
I notice how terrifying it is going into a reformer Pilates class because I'm the one that that receives people.
Yes.
And I have seen so many poor young or older women not feel 100% comfortable. Look around the room. The girl next to them's stronger. The girl next to them's younger, older, more experienced, la, la, la. And I think that makes people's heads go, oh my, I shouldn't be here. I don't know what I'm doing, and not fully concentrate. Mm. And the difference I personally think with yoga, but I it could well be more, having practiced a lot more, that I go into a yoga class and think, oh, thank the Lord. And I close my eyes and they don't open for the next hour or 2 hours. Whereas I think when you're new to these things, and it's the same with everything, there's always going to be someone that's better than you, in inverted commas, but that these aren't about what other people are doing. It's about what you're doing for yourself. And I think with that in mind, anytime you go to something new or something that you've always wanted to try, it could be rock climbing, it could be anything of any variation, horse riding, football, whatever you want to, I don't know, you're a female and you've just seen the Lionesses win and now you want to go and try and play football, but everyone, there's always going to be someone better than you. And I think the moment that you block that out of your mind and go to try something that you've desperately wanted to do for a long time, that is what should be your starting point, because you're doing it for you and for no one else.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I say this a lot, and it's one of my favourite quotes. Comparison is the thief of all joy. People are going to the reformer class, they're eyeing up the person next to them, and they're going, oh, you know, they're stronger, they're fitter, they're whatever. Just focus on you. Why does the person to your left or to your right or in front of you matter? They might turn around and go, oh, let me help you. And then all of a sudden you feel energized and positive, and you have some random person you've never met before, you know, polarizing you and trying to help you and help you become better. And then all of a sudden, you know, you gain in confidence. So, yeah, I think comparison is a thief of all joy. And I think that people are terrible for it. We go into new environments and it's daunting and it's scary and it's like, oh, what do I do? Just do. Find a way to do it. If you don't do it properly, doesn't matter. You've gone. Someone sat on the someone sat on the sofa thinking about going and doing it, but you've gone. What does a typical yoga class look like?
Do you know what? I don't think there is a typical yoga class, because there's such a great variety of yoga that's available, and whether that be just going for a walk and calling it a yoga practice, which is allowed. I mean, it's part of the whole bracket of yoga, or whether it's going to a hot yoga class where you want to sweat and your muscles go all stretch. There's so much variety in what's available to you that I think educating oneself on what it is that you're going for can then decipher like what a typical class looks like. Because when I've literally just booked into a yin yoga, which is like slow holds, you do about six poses in the class, and a sound bath on Monday night, and I essentially, my back will probably not leave the floor for an hour.
So
that kind of yoga class will look like me with my eyes closed, totally zonked in another world, just with the essence of calm, peace, meditation in some respects. Like a guided meditation is always there as a yoga practice. If you want physicality, you've got your vinyasa, you've got your hatha, you've got things like rocket. You can then start going to balance workshops, and all of this comes under the bracket. So there's not per se one type of structure of what a class looks like. However, mine are generally pretty chilled. We like to stretch, we like to be calm, and then we flow and floaty and we just generally, I'll put it to the board on what anyone wants on the day.
It sounds like it's got such an important place in people's lives, because we think about how busy our minds are, and especially London life and anyone really, you know, there's so much noise from everywhere. It probably must be quite soothing and relaxing to probably just be there in, you know, surrounded by people, but in your own energy and focusing on what you want to focus on and your mind and your thoughts and slowing everything down. So, you know, it's probably, I don't do any yoga like this and I probably should, but, you know, maybe once a week would probably really benefit me. But, you know, I can see how it definitely has a place in people's lives. And that kind of leads me on to my next question with, like, how can yoga support both physical strength and mental well-being?
Well, I suppose, in essence, the practice, if you take it right back to where yoga all came from, and there's a thing called the Yoga Sutras, so I guess it's the book by which we're led on, and the writings and the ancient scriptures, it's written that there's eight steps, essentially. I mean, the first two come with a lot more than eight, but there are eight pathways that lead you to your enlightenment, which is your final stage. Okay. And along the way with those, you basically practice asana, which is your physical movement. So okay. You would go to an asana or asana, however one wants to pronounce it, yeah. To your asana class, which is your normal class. So that's your movement class. And then the reason you would do that is so that you can sit stronger in meditation. So this takes it years and years and years and years, hundreds of years back, that you can't sit in meditation and peace and quiet without distraction of my back hurts. Oh, I need to move, or I need to be more comfortable, etc. And so the reason we practice the movement is so your body becomes stronger so you can sit for longer. So we're talking hours and hours and hours of pure, calm, seated meditation and not allowing distractions to come in. So the two combined, I guess, sometimes actually a class where you do the whole class with your eyes closed, so you just listen to the words, and you could sometimes, if you know your practice better than or more thoroughly, you know what's coming next, so you know where to go in your flow or whatever, or your sun salutations, which is your standard up, down, up, down, moving through the mat. And with that, the peace and tranquility can just keep you just moving up, down. We do 108 sun salutations in certain meditation sessions. So you just go up, down, 108 times. By the end of it, I don't think your brain has the capacity to allow thoughts in, because you've gone through the point of thinking, oh my god, my body's so tired, oh, why do I have to do this again? It is just inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, and that rhythm creates a meditation that guides you through to a place of complete calm and tranquility.
Okay,
I hope that answered your question.
No, it did. It's interesting. It is interesting. And for someone who's completely new to yoga, what's the best way to get started without feeling intimidated?
I would say, I think we lightly covered it earlier, but just don't care about what anyone else is doing.
Yeah,
I would do your research. I would probably steer clear of YouTube, in all honesty, because I think when you first start, your body can start to, your YouTuber can say, put your left leg in the air, and suddenly your left leg's like, ping, ow. Then you're thinking about the pain that you've just instructed on your body, and you're not fully thinking about why and moving mindfully. And it's very likely that you're going to go to a class and think, God, I couldn't stand that teacher, or I hated how cold it was, or I didn't like the music, or something irritated me.
Okay.
But the thing that is really important is just to keep going, keep going, keep going. Try different classes. I think I know classes that I teach are on ClassPass for Reformer. But I don't know much about ClassPass, but I think it allows you pay a membership and your first month is £1, I think.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
And it allows you to go to as many classes as in the membership or whatever that you pay for. And so it actually is a really good platform to allow you to go
and
try
things.
Different things. And I think trying vinyasa, trying yin, trying restorative, trying stretch, trying hatha, trying just like, you know, sound baths, anything, just to really take yourself out of your body and experience something calm and less road traffic-y and London-y or wherever you are in the city.
No, it's good. It's good advice. I like it. I think the class pass is a great idea. It's a really good concept as well. Pretty sure, like you said, you pay a membership and then you get X amount of passes and you can try different places if you're, especially as a beginner. Like as a beginner or a novice, it's a really nice kind of safety net instead of go and spend X amount of money for membership and you're like, I hate it. Absolutely do not enjoy this. Right, let's move on to Reset. So how does Reset's platform bring together different elements of wellness like yoga, fitness and mindfulness?
So essentially, what I wanted to do was create a place where you can go online and you can basically have access to whatever a fitness coach would offer you, but turn it into more mindfulness, more eating clean, more mental structured day. Like, it's not just purely what's your weight goal, what's your weight get, like what do you want to lose, how much muscle do you want to put on, this is what, how I'm going to help you for the next month or 4 weeks, and we check in every week and la la la. It's more just allowing someone to have a place to go, someone to talk to, some, allowing yourself to move if that's what you want online. I have like a plethora of like videos and
educational
advice
stuff like that,
and manuals and booklets, and so it's just this kind of safe space that if you are shy or you don't want to go out or you don't have the time to go out or you don't have the money, it's allowing that sort of, let's say, class pass principle to come to your home and still offer you a retreat at home.
Okay, I like it. I do like it. It's yeah, it's accessible to all, and like by the sounds of it, it's quite educational as well, and you've got like a support network, so that's good. In your experience, what impact can consistent yoga or movement practice have on someone who's overall lifestyle, on someone's overall lifestyle or mindset? How can it really help people?
Well, what I would say firsthand is life can be really like high. We all know how high pressured life can be. And especially with social media and becoming more prominent in how your matron Pilates girl or your girl dressing like XYZ, there's a lot of standards that we have to meet in terms of our fitness goals or our mental goals. And there's a lot of people trying to tell you, you know, I stopped drinking 5 years ago and I'm now into matcha and I go to Pilates every day. And those pressures, I think, take away the importance of what the practice can actually offer you. And when you truly disconnect yourself from the pressures of the outside and you start to think, I need to slow my mind down and I need to find my center. And again, it doesn't have to be hippy dippy associated.
No,
it can literally be just 5 minutes of affirming how your day is going to go, or sitting with a nice herbal tea that you've picked fresh from a mint plant that you bought in Sainsbury's for £2. You know, it doesn't have to be go down the cafe and spend £6 on a matcha and £100 on a Lululemon set.
Yeah,
it can be just doing something mindfully that can make yourself feel better without having to succumb to outside pressures, which are they're everywhere. Like, I turn my Instagram on and I've written in Pilates class inspiration and the girl's got 1,000 abs. I didn't even know there was space on the body for that. So we all succumb to it. However, I think starting the practice and finding a way that you can withdraw your mind from the busy pressures of the outside world, that is what practicing will allow you to find, whether it be through movement, through reading old scriptures, through breathing, which is one of our most important parts, is you can find that peace, that serenity, that calm, even in the tube, but just by finding, you know, square breathing or breathing in, exhaling out. So the accessibility is there. The pressure does not have to be there. I think you just have to do it for you. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think we are our own priorities. We are our own main characters in our story. So we need to make sure that we prioritize ourselves. Daisy, that's it. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you online? Social media, a website, a work page? Let us know.
I would say my best port of call is through probably Instagram, where I run my own account, so you can literally just send a message. I see them all. That's Daisy Robbins with one B, R-O-B-I-N-S. Otherwise, I have a website that gives further information, so that's www.resetbydaisyrobbins.co.uk.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Now we are going to be doing some listener questions. So it is time for you to get your fitness questions sent in to us. If you want to get involved, you can DM us at What the Health Show on Instagram. Right, first question is, I struggle with emotional eating, especially in the evenings. Do you have any practical tips for managing cravings and building a healthier relationship with food? Yeah, I do, actually. And I think this is a really good question, because I think a lot of people do this and a lot of people are guilty of emotional eating. First of all, control what you can control. So, for example, if you buy it, you're going to eat it. So maybe start with not buying it. If you then find that you happen to lean towards Deliveroo, Uber Eats, Just Eat, and by the way, they are not sponsored by the show. I'm not being paid to talk about them. But what I would say is try and avoid those apps. Delete them off your phone. Block the website on your computer. That would be a really good start if you really have like an emotional eating issue. Okay? Evenings are for doing lots of things, but I think my biggest piece of advice in regards to the eating and managing cravings is popcorn is the most satiating snack out there. That means for every 240 calories of popcorn, you are going to be fuller than if you had 240 calories of nuts or whatever it is. So if you're going to snack on anything, popcorn, rice cakes, I don't care what anyone says, rice cakes are really tasty. If you get flavored ones, you can also add a bit of peanut butter and stuff like that. So maybe the options you're having in the evenings aren't very good. What are you snacking on? If it's bars and bars of chocolate, or you're eating tubs and tubs of ice cream, don't bloody buy it. That's my best piece of advice. If I have it in the house, I eat it. And I would literally eat every inch of what is in my cupboard. So just remember, if I don't buy it, I don't eat it. So if you don't buy it, you probably won't eat it, okay? And you'll be less likely, if you're a little bit lazier, you'll be less likely to want to go out and buy it, because you'll already be sat down, you'll be chilling out. Hopefully that helps. Right, next one. There's so much conflicting advice online. How can I tell what workouts or diets are actually right for me? First of all, diets don't exist. It needs to be a lifestyle. If it's a diet, it's never going to stick. Workouts, well, here's something that a lot of influencers will not tell you. They all do the same to a certain extent. Obviously, the better you program and the better you periodize, technically the better the results, but it's all 20, 30% the gym, 80, 70% the food you consume. So you need to make it a lifestyle. You have to enjoy it. If you do not enjoy it, then doing a little 8 to 12 week diet will work, but you will put the weight back on and it will not stay gone for long. So think of it like I'm getting ready for summer, or I'm getting ready for a wedding, or I want to drop two, three dress sizes, or one or two dress sizes. Think of it like that. So the conflicting advice, there is lots, because there's a lot of rubbish and a lot of heebie-jeebie out there. Long and short is Weight training is good for you. Strength training is good for you. It helps you live longer. It makes your bones feel better. It makes your tendons feel good. You will genuinely feel better because you'll be stronger and you'll be healthier overall. So 3 full body sessions a week, or 4, which is 2 upper, 2 lower, and that means upper body and lower body. So maybe an upper body, a lower body, a rest, an upper, a lower, a rest. Or if you want to do 5, do 5. Depending on your gender, depending on your sex, depending on what you prefer, what you want to do, that is where the conflicting advice will come from. So that's my advice on the workouts. And then on diets, again, like I said, you've got to make it stick. It's got to be a lifestyle. You've got to enjoy it. If you want to have pizza once a week, have pizza once a week. But just watch what you eat throughout the week. Measure everything. Log everything. If you don't, you want to guess, then guess. But if you guess, you can't guarantee results. That's the reality of this game and health and fitness. You know, it's the reality of it. If you guess, you will never truly know if you're there or thereabouts. Oh, I lost a kilo. Great. Was it a kilo of water? Was it a kilo of, you know, lard? What was it a kilo of? So hopefully that helps. Next question. I work long hours at a desk and my posture is terrible. Are there any simple stretches or exercises I can do during the day? Yes. Yes, there is. I would highly suggest getting a band. Now, not a rubber band, but like a gym band. Okay, like a big one. The thinner would be the best to start with. I would highly suggest doing banded pull-aparts throughout the day. 3 sets of 10. Treat it like rehabilitation. With rehab, if you do morning, middle, and night 3 times a day, you are on the money. So for you, if you have poor posture, go to the gym. Start doing posture exercises like protraction and retraction, which is bringing your shoulders forwards and bringing your shoulders back, but making sure your shoulders aren't too high up, so they're dropping down quite nicely. And then that way you're activating the middle of your back, which is where your rhomboids are. They are muscles underneath your muscles. They are postural muscles. So that will help. The banded pull apart will also help you bring your shoulders back. It's arms out in front of you, palms facing down or up, either or. Make sure there's a little bit of tension on the band and you pull apart until you are feeling a little bit of activation, and then you bring it all the way in and then out and then in and then out, and you do 3 sets of 10, 3 sets of 12. You will feel a burn. They will help with your rear delts as well, and that will be really, really good for your posture. Stretching-wise, not really. I think just consciously thinking about your posture will really, really help you. So just think about that and think about your posture, really. That's the biggest thing. And right, guys, that is it from me. An absolute pleasure from our fantastic guests. We've got Elle Mace, and we've also had Daisy Robbins. Thank you so much for joining us today on What the Health. Just a little reminder for you guys to, you know, download and listen to each week and follow us on social media. We are at What the Health Show on Instagram if you want some help with your health and fitness goals. I also provide a top-tier coaching service with no BS, problem solving, and I'll also hold your hand every step of the way. So if this is of interest to you, please reach out to me at George Burt on Instagram. That is at GEORGESBERT. Also, the show will be available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. A massive thank you from me. I'll be back at 11 a.m. next week for another jam-packed show. I'm George. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Love you. Bye.